Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If, though, this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, and give our discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking in depth to one such hero, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit about what's made them who they are today. I'm delighted to be joined today by CEO of Tribal Impact, Sarah Goodall. Sarah, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Good to have you here. So I can see where you are. You can see where I am because we're recording this over Zoom. But for the benefit of our listeners, where do we find you today?
Well, physically, you find me on the south coast of the UK. So I'm in a place called Portsmouth next to the sea, which is lovely. But I'm also all over digital. So you can mostly find me active on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Instagram. Depends what you want to learn, really. If you want to learn about my work, I'm on LinkedIn. If you want to learn about my park runs, I'm on Instagram. And if you want to just see inspirational stuff that I pick up, I'm on Twitter. So, yeah, so I'm all over.
Well, we'll leave the park run discussion to park run type podcasts. Because I'm just the business marketing bit today. I'm taking it from that then that you're in your kind of office for Tribal Impact in Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But we're a fully remote company. So we have people all over the place. So whilst we have a hub down here in Portsmouth, which is our little centre that we run things from, we do actually, all our people are located in different places. So it's brilliant.
Okay. Well, that leads me neatly into the question of, well tell me, what does Tribal Impact do then?
Yeah, so Tribal Impact was really born out of an experiment that I did when I used to work for SAP, which was probably nearly 8 years ago now, where I was experimenting with social media. And I realized that people don't really follow brand channels for content. You know, they follow people that they know, like, and trust. That's a common thing. So Tribal Impact is all about activating employee voices on social media, and that can be leaders and executives, sales teams with social selling, experts and employee experts as influencers, but also the wider employee community can have an impact on your social media brand. So that is what we do.
Okay. And your CEO there, so I've always wanted to ask, what does a CEO do then?
Well, do you know, that is such a good question, because I'm learning that myself, right? I've grown this business over the last 8 years. We're going to be 8 years old in August. And my role has changed. I mean, to start with, you do everything, right? The role of the CEO is you do everything. And then as you get bigger, we're now 22 employees and we're recruiting more this year. The role of the CEO I'm learning is changing. It's about facilitating an environment that allows your employees to grow and push themselves. And that I see as my main job, is to facilitate that environment so people can be their very best and grow into, you know, their best potential. Really, that's what I believe is the role of a CEO.
And then your people, it sounds like that kind of a mix of trainers and engineers. Would that be fair?
Yeah, we have subject matter experts, we have trainers, we have content experts. So when we work with employees as influencers, we help them create content. We have designers, we have video experts when we want to create video content. So, yeah, so it is a mix, actually. And what we're starting to develop a bit more is more understanding around best-in-class learning and development techniques, and inclusive and accessible learning techniques. And so, yeah, we've got, it's really cool. It is really cool.
And it sounds really cool. And I'm going to ask you a bit more about that in a moment. But I'd like to kind of, first of all, focus on you. And I'd love to know, so you've talked to us a little bit about the crazy journey of the last 8 years. But how about before that? How did you get to a place where you decided, right, this is the thing for me? What were the key steps on your career journey?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I did go to university and I studied product design, innovation and marketing. And it was there really that I always wanted to be a designer. I love design. But somebody said to me, it's very competitive. So I was like, okay. And I left university and I managed to get a graduate role at IBM. And I think once your first job often sets you up for your career, the industry that you're in. And I was very, very lucky actually to get that. I had an amazing grounding. Then I went to one of their business partners, which was just a 12 employee company. So, you know, you go from a massive global company to a small company where you have to do everything, PR, events, everything. And that was really good for me, actually. And then I worked for Hitachi and then most recently for SAP. I think coming to your question about when did I realize I wanted my own business, I always knew one day I would have a business. I always knew, but I didn't know what in. That was the bit that took a while to come to me. I always knew I was learning things from different businesses, like, oh, I don't like that, but I would take that, and I wouldn't do that, but I would do this. But I just didn't know what that business would be. I knew that I loved working with people, I loved social media. And for me, this is the best connection of everything, right? It's good for business, you get to work with individuals, which is on behalf of the good, it's the good of the business. So it's the perfect, for me, it's the perfect world, this is. You have an impact on people's lives, but it also helps the business thrive. So, yeah. So
it sounds kind of almost as if kind of each step in your career has given you a kind of further clue that this is what you should be doing.
Absolutely. And I made career decisions not based on climbing the ladder, but on actually filling skills gaps. So I and again, we were talking about procrastinating before I came on. But yeah, we did talk a little bit about, before I left SAP, I had an amazing opportunity really to take voluntary redundancy and start a business. And I thought, I'm never going to have this opportunity again, but yeah, Actually I don't have any sales experience, so maybe I should take a sales role. And then, you know, I just thought, no, the time is right now, do it, stop it. So I learned how to do sales myself, but I have been plugging gaps in my career. You know, I haven't had experience here and I haven't had experience there, and I should try and do that. And so I took those sort of moves rather than going up a ladder.
And is that approach something you'd advise others to do? We have quite a lot of people listening to this podcast who are kind of just on the just starting out in their marketing career, and is that maybe a tip that you would give them?
Yeah, I think so. I think they call it portfolio careers now, and I think they're much more accepted than they have been before. You know, people look for that. They look a variety of experience and knowledge and demonstrating that you're pushing yourself to grow. I think it makes you more valuable. It makes you more valuable, not just in a monetary sense, but in terms of an experience sense. And certainly, you know, now I'm in a position where I'm hiring, I look for that. I look for people who grow themselves, develop, have taken decisions that they can back up because they were trying to fill skills gaps or they knew that they needed to develop in that area. I think it's a real benefit.
And circling back to tribal impact itself, mm-hmm, which does sound like a really exciting business line that you're in, I'm wondering, what's the latest in that space, you know, in terms of businesses seeking to build the impact from their people? What's the latest there? How has, for example, the pandemic changed people's desire or appetite for this sort of thing?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. There are several things that have changed. So the pandemic pushed a lot of employees into home working, and, you know, not out of choice. So social was the only platform that they could use to connect with family and friends and colleagues. So it absolutely accelerated employee adoption of social media at a rate that you just couldn't put guidelines around, policies around, training around, you know. So now there are a lot of cases. If you just put into Google, you know, TikTok got me fired, every week there is a case where an employee inadvertently, sometimes intentionally, but more often than not, they get themselves into hot water because they've said stuff on social that's pulled the brand reputation into the limelight. So that's one thing that's happened. Then, you know, after the pandemic, we've had this massive movement in talent, the Great Resignation, and brands have really struggled to either retain, engage, recruit the top talent. And they're starting to realize that their employer brand is not just this beautifully carved together advert. It's actually the voice of the employee saying our culture's great or our culture's rubbish, you know. And I think leaders have suddenly woken up to this. It's like, oh, this is not a quick fix, is it? This is like we have to wear our culture on our sleeve. And it's, you know, so there's a few things there that have happened that are driving this as well. And I would say going forward, where I see this going, I mean, maybe we'll touch on this in a bit, but, you know, employees are the sum of the brand. So you talk about they are not the conduit or the channel for brand amplification, but they are the brand. And as soon as companies realize that if you sort of facilitate the employee brand, the sum of their voices creates the overall brand voice, which is actually so much more trustworthy and credible than maybe the marketing department crafting, you know, a beautiful image. And that for me is really exciting, I think.
So the picture you paint there is kind of an opportunity growing. I wonder though if you see any hurdles to that growth.
Yeah, I see a lot of resistance. I see departments not working together. I think we're going to see a lot more HR marketing collaboration happening more than normal. You see typically internal comms, employee comms, that sits in HR or communications. Employer branding would sit in HR, but the people that are expert in branding tend to sit in marketing. Social media sits in marketing. There's a lot of silos. I think the problem a lot of companies are going to have, different bits belong in different places and no one is managing the holistic approach. I see that. But on the flip side, I do believe marketers have such a major opportunity. I really do. To grab hold of this and lead this at the board, to say, look, you know, we need to get this thing together. I'm going to work with HR, I'm going to work with comms, I'm going to work with sales, and we're going to drive a holistic approach to what our brand looks like. I would love to see that.
So, why do you think it doesn't happen?
I think because a lot of things have happened in silos. So sales teams will go off and do their sales enablement, social selling, that kind of thing. Then you've got advocacy sitting in comms. They're using it as an internal comms tool and a way to get brand content out. So I think a lot of things have happened in isolation. And I don't think anybody either has the vision or maybe the experience to say, do you know what? We need to pull this thing together and start bashing heads together. I think perhaps I saw this emerging at SAP and I thought, hold on a minute, somebody needs to get hold of this and connect the dots. But I still, even like nearly 8 years on and with the companies that we work with, you know, it's a change management process. It's not a quick fix. It takes time.
Is it also a problem of a particular size of company? Because I guess you have to be a certain size for actually even the silos to exist in the first place, right?
Yeah. You do tend to find it's the larger B2B organizations. I'd say it starts around 1,000 plus, where, you know, you get subcultures. I mean, that can happen even in smaller companies. But I do see a lot of challenger companies coming up, you know, because these people are strong. These companies are strong. So you look at like the Snowflakes, you know, these challenger brands, like other, you know, small, I'm trying to think of some others off the top of my head, but these smaller IT brands, for example, they're coming up with good, strong propositions. They understand the value of embedding social into the culture. It's harder with larger organizations because they have subcultures and divisions and silos, and so yeah, it's tricky. So change management process, cultural process. So
and how about if you throw a kind of international lens into this as well? Is it kind of, does the kind of nuance of whether your company is national, international, or global fall into the way the challenge is handled?
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that, because I always talk about the layers of complexity. So at a very starting level, you've got different departments need activating in different ways. Then you've got different generations, so different attitudes towards technology and digital channels, you know, so you've got different attitudes as well. Then you've got geographical barriers, right? So just at a very basic level, some certain social platforms work in some countries, but not in others. Or maybe they use the same social platforms, but they use them differently. So yeah. If you overlay all those layers of complexity, it becomes very difficult. And this is where I always sort of advocate for like a global center of excellence, but with local insight and execution, because this is, you get the best of both. You stay close to the local market, but you're driving a consistent approach at a global level.
And if there are people listening to this, and I'm sure there will be, who kind of think that, oh my goodness, I can see that that's an issue that applies to me, apart from reaching out to you, and obviously I'll let you share your details in a moment, but you know, are there a kind of couple of key starting places that you would urge them to get moving on?
Yeah, I mean, I think every company is different. Some have tools in place, some don't. Some have done training, some haven't. And it also depends on the industry, if you're regulated or not, where you start from. Typically in B2B, we find that sales, because they're at the front end of the customer, they're the ones that get activated the first. So really digging into how active are your sales teams today. And you can use tools like Sales Navigator at a very basic level. You can have a look at your company. You can even look by geography. How active are the sales teams? And you should, best in class sales teams are, it's 30% at least are sharing content on LinkedIn in the last 30 days. So if you're any, tend to be IC, it's sort of 5 to 10%, but you should be best in class. Salesforce's sales teams are, it's about 30% of their sales organization are sharing on LinkedIn, so they're constantly nurturing their audiences. So I would dig into that. So if you're in B2B, I would say look at your sales organization, how active are they today? And I would also look at your leadership team, because no one's going to move unless they can see inspiration from above and that they can see they're leading by example. So I think you need to take a good look at both of those. And how do they look against competitors? And at a very basic level, you can just have a quick look and see what your competitors are doing and just put like for like. If you're trying to build a business case for your leaders, nothing shows up more than showing this is what they're doing and this is what we're doing. We've got an opportunity to improve. It gets their attention. So
is there something we should read? Is there a kind of, I don't know, tribal impact for dummies book out there that we could access?
Oh, Dave, it's on my bucket list to write a book. I've been wanting to write a book for, well, since I left SAP, actually, so I really ought to get on with it. But no, I mean, we give a lot of content away for free on our blog. We've got a ton of resources. We've got workbooks to take people through processes, budget sheets. You know, we just want to help people be successful, and all that stuff's ungated. You can get it off our website under the resources tab. So we're always giving things away. And if you follow our socials as well, we do a lot of LinkedIn lives with interviewing people that do this well. So we ask all the tricky questions like, how did you get here? And what happened when it went wrong? And how did you get over that? And I think just sharing that knowledge and mistakes just helps people learn how not to do it. You know, because every company is different. So yeah, but one day there'll be a book.
You can come back and talk to us about it when that's done. The how not to do it thing is quite interesting, though, right? Because there will also be some people thinking, oh, I'm not sure I want all of my employees to be sharing, you know, the crown jewels of what's going on in our business, the kind of nuggets there, and there'll be the risk averse. How do you counter the kind of strong temptation that it might be safer to do now.
Yeah, it is a little bit dangerous to think like that, because employees are on social, whether you like it or not. There's a brilliant study by, who is it? It's not Brunswick. I read lots of research reports, Weber Shandwick, that talks about employees that are on social media. And I can't remember the stats off the top of my head, but they're already talking about your brand, whether you're training them to or not. I think it's something like 30% have mentioned your brand on socials without any assistance or being asked. That could be positive or negative. The fact of the matter is, they've got a mobile phone, whether they're sat at their desk being monitored or stood in the Starbucks queue getting their lunch, they're going to be on social. So you can stick your head in the sand and pretend it's not happening, or you can get your arms around it and try and reduce the reputational risk or damage that could be done. Now, I would be on the proactive side rather than the reactive, because that's crisis management. You need to embrace the opportunity, actually even turn it around. This is not about reducing reputational risk or any crisis. This could work for us as a business. It could help attract talent. It could help attract customers. We could engage with influencers and learn and support our customers at scale. The benefits far outweigh the negative. It's not easy.
What proportion of your customers are coming to you because they've been prompted by a crisis versus, hey, there's an amazing opportunity out there, there's no crisis here, let's just seize the moment?
Well, it's interesting, because that's a really good question. Yes, we do get some that like, oh, this happened and we can't have it happen again. But not often. We tend to work with innovators that want to drive change, that see that cultural opportunity generally. They see that things are a bit disjointed, a bit siloed, need to be pulled together. So we tend to work with those people. And we work, actually, to be honest, we work better with those people as well, because we're not a crisis management company. We don't do that. But what we do is we harness the opportunity with social. So it tends to be, by the time they get to us, they realize that actually it's a benefit, and maybe they had crisis in the past, but actually they're on a positive journey with social. So
okay, so if it's a crisis, dial 999. But if people want to seize the moment, how can they find out more from Tribal Impact?
Yeah, so the best place to find us is have a look on our website, tribalimpact.com, or reach out to me. My LinkedIn inbox is open. Anyone can message me. I might regret that, but no, really, I don't mind. And it is me behind my LinkedIn profile. I've not outsourced it to anyone. It's me. And that's another thing we advocate. Don't try and get someone in to pretend. So that's the best way to get hold of us, really.
Sarah Goodall, it's great talking to you this afternoon. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Dave.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Sarah Goodall, and thanks to our technical person from Through the Eye, Alicia Grayson. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.